comprehensive plan. We will receive an update, I believe, today. And again, we're on a schedule, hopefully, for a draft to be completed early spring, and public comments, and hopefully some adoption of a revised comp plan late spring, early summer. That's what we're hoping. So with that, I will turn it over for an update.
Great. Thank you. Council President, members of the council, I'm Mark Fogler with Lexington Culver Group. I am a representative of a much larger planning team, including a variety of planners, designers, engineers, you name it. So if you have technical questions about transportation issues, for example, I may be able to answer those, or I may be able to say, well, I have to get back to you on that. Because I am a planner by trade and a landscape architect. We do indeed want to take a little bit of time and kind of provide you with an update of where things are. And I think we were last here. I should have looked exactly, but I think it was probably October. And there's a lot that's happened in that, those ensuing months. And I want to bring up to speed on some of those things and what has occurred. If you were doing what human nature would typically do, and you've leafed through the handout of slides, you notice there's a lot of slides. Don't be too put off by that, because these go fairly quickly, particularly in some cases. So let me wander in and kind of tell you what we're doing and what we've been up to. I'll take a little bit of time today just to provide an update on the overall planning process. And there may be people either watching or in the room that aren't familiar with this, and I will not go back to square one, but give you a quick kind of overview of where we are and how we got to where we are today. I want to talk a little bit about the alternatives that we've evaluated and some community engagement that was wrapped around those that occurred in early December. And I think you're probably aware that those series of meetings took place in a variety of venues, and I'll talk a little bit about who had an opportunity to kind of weigh in on that. And then importantly, I think I want to talk about what we see as kind of some emerging underlying principles that are going to guide development of the plan. And as you just mentioned, our next step really is to roll up our sleeves and put together the draft components of the plan. And so this is framework for that, and in that regard, I think it's important to pass that in front of you today. And I'll talk a little bit about next steps. The acronym, as you well know, and as you can probably see this in your sleep now, this P2S is the acronym for Planning to Succeed, the Comprehensive Plan for the City of Rochester. I think it's important to remind everybody that this is really another of a step in a continuum of ongoing planning that this community really has been undertaking for decades. This isn't a one-shot deal. This is an update of the current comprehensive plan, but also there's been a lot of work done, as you well know, around the DMC, around the downtown master plan, bike planning, energy planning, and so forth. And so it's a piece of that overall puzzle. The comprehensive plan is important because it's going to look at and help guide the future growth and development of the city. The typical kinds of things that you would expect to be part of a plan, vision and a framework for decision making, certainly is part of this. But I think a big part of this also is looking at how this city can efficiently utilize existing resources and best expand infrastructure in a manner that works well to meet the future needs of the community. As we've talked about before, really one of the strong premises of this whole effort is this core concept. In the old days, if you will, you would do a land use plan and then you would roll up your sleeves and say, okay, now what are we going to do for housing and transportation and parks around that? This is a different approach, and it's a different approach pretty much everywhere today, looking really at the interrelated linkages of transportation, land use, and infrastructure, all kind of fitting together at one time, if you will, not one piece of that and then looking at another piece of that. If stepping back for just a second and looking at why the comprehensive planning effort is being done, Rochester has had a steady pattern of growth over the years. You can see the chart off to the left side there with just kind of the ever-increasing arc of growth. So that what the community is experiencing today, 10 years ago, or what we think will be 10 years in the future, is very much similar to that pattern. There's been obviously a land expansion that's taken place. The historical growth is shown there on the right side within that time period as well. As we're looking at the comprehensive plan, we are looking at a projection of population, employment, and households. It's consistent with, again, that model, if you will, that the city has had in place over time. The one advantage I can tell you that Rochester has that most communities don't is the planning department and the transportation folks have been very attentive to monitoring trends in transportation and housing growth and population growth. That has helped seed the projections. As you can see, we're looking at by 2040, could be as many as 50,000 new residents, 50,000 new jobs, and about 23,000 new housing units. And so that is significant.
If you look at Rochester today, as I mentioned a minute ago, there has been this kind of typical, for Rochester at least, upswing of growth on a fairly predictable pattern. You have a very active downtown. I don't think I probably have to tell you that. And certainly from our work and the work of some of our sub-consultants, very unique for a community of this size. We've looked at some precedents around the country, and Rochester has some unique attributes. Obviously, you've gone through a major downtown planning effort recently, both with the downtown master plan about 3-4 years ago, and with the more recent DMC work that's been done. The city has a strong, I would emphasize that, park and open space system, and it's predominantly a single-family housing community, and it will continue to be that. We heard early on in a lot of the community engagement we did that there were certain aspects of quality of life that kept coming up. What makes Rochester a unique place? And significantly tied to that is if we're going to emphasize that we have a quality of life and you won awards to that effect, what does that really mean? Because it's really a key to attracting and retaining residents and jobs. You know, face it, Rochester competes with other communities throughout the upper Midwest for jobs, for people, for talent. And we heard people say that in order for Rochester to put its best foot forward, so to speak, it needs to be vibrant and prosperous and healthy, and I won't go through all of the terms that are there, but again, those came from the public. Those aren't the plannerisms that we could put together. They simply were a compilation of what people had said, and these were the strong messages that came forward. As we were doing the comprehensive plan, we really had the separate fortune of having the Southeast Minnesota Realtors Group did a survey, not directly tied to the comprehensive plan, but it was informative to the comprehensive plan. And a couple of key questions that provide that linkage that they ask is, what kind of neighborhood would you prefer to live in? And interestingly enough, we'll call it roughly an even split, 53% of the people said they really would like to live in a neighborhood that has a mix of houses, it has stores, it has things I can walk to, it has attractions that are close at hand, and 45% said, you know, I'm willing to drive to those things. So there's a pretty strong showing in the community that an interest in a variety of housing types and styles. Specifically also was asked, would you say there's enough housing options that are different in Rochester? And again, 43% said no, we could use some more. 54% said yes. So a pretty even split there. What's significant in our minds in terms of doing the comprehensive plan is that message that's coming from these survey results are coming from people that are here today. And one of the big challenges with the comprehensive plan is that we're really planning for people that are going to be here in 2040. And new people that are coming in between today and 2040, and obviously it's hard to say, okay, where's the spokesperson for the person that's going to move into Rochester in the year 2029? Well, obviously they're not there, but we can surmise that based on some of the trends that are occurring with demographics, with an aging population, with an immigrant population that's growing, with a young population that's growing as well, that those kind of attributes that people are looking for in housing today match pretty closely to some of the interests, not all, but some of the interests of the people that will be here in the future. If you look at Rochester today, you have about 3 million visitors annually. I was walking through the Mayo Clinic Square in downtown Minneapolis just before the holidays and just happened to notice a display board, and I don't know, I can't attest to the accuracy of it, but it's stated that Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, has 5.2 million visitors annually. If that's accurate, you know, Rochester obviously has a great draw here, and there's a lot of people that come in. When the downtown master plan was done a few years ago, this is a term you'll recognize, there was a lot of talk about mode share, and the council actually adopted that plan and adopted a new mode share goal. Today, 71% of the people, roughly today, drive alone downtown, only 11% take transit. The interest of the downtown master plan and the adopted position of the city is that those numbers will change in the future. In looking at those future needs, as I was kind of alluding to a moment ago, diversity in population will continue. Low-income populations are growing. There's a growth in smaller-sized households, both at the young professionals level, and particularly in the more elderly segment of the population. That number of people is expected to double in size by 2040. So there's significant growth there, and that significant growth is typically looking for housing alternatives. If you look at the job growth that's projected, it will nearly double the number of downtown daily commuters, which led to, again, a few years ago, the city stepping back and saying, okay, we need to change the mix a little bit, because otherwise we're building blocks and blocks of new parking structures. We can't build enough lanes to get people in and out of downtown. So the solution was to come up with a new mode share goal, which says that instead of 71% driving alone, 50% will be driving alone. instead of about 10% on transit, about 23% of the people will be taking transit. So in order to meet those kinds of objectives, there's a certain aspect of the plan that can focus and help do that. When we talked earlier with the community about what are your priorities, and again, this came from roughly 6,000 touch points, 5,000 touch points probably at the time we had, of people commenting on various things, we heard that there were really some emerging priorities, and don't worry, I won't read every word here, but transportation, access to amenities, placemaking, housing diversity, affordability, fiscal responsibility, and community health were all really strong positions that we heard from people. We've reflected those in looking at alternatives. If you recall last time that I was before you, we talked some about the trends and what that was showing us, and then basically very quickly outlined the alternatives. We've gone more into a look at what alternative development scenarios might mean, how those might play out, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. In order to do that, as we've talked about before in this room, we had a very intensely data-driven modeling process that we've gone through. It looked at a couple of scenarios as to how this city might develop in the future. And I have stressed this at every meeting, and I'll stress it again, the bold line. This is not the comprehensive plan. We are not there. This was testing a variety of possibilities that we can learn from and that we can use that information to help develop the plan and the components of the plan that will be coming back to you. We went through this process of looking at trends. As you know, we went into an evaluation of those scenarios. And now what's emerging from that on the extreme right side of the screen is we're picking up from that body of information what we would call some guiding principles for maybe defining what the preferred direction will be, which ultimately will be the Rochester Comprehensive Plan. That work on putting that together will begin literally momentarily, but we've got some big ideas that have come out of this that I want to share with you because those are guiding aspects for the Comprehensive Plan itself. Of those priorities, those six that I mentioned before, there were larger clusters than people that were talking about transportation, development character, and fiscal responsibility. And so we used those primarily as a bit of a lens in the scenario evaluation to say, okay, we've got these priorities that people have talked about in the community. What's important? We looked at how those reflect in the continuation of trends as they would go today onward, what a dispersed growth kind of pattern might mean for the city of Rochester. And then we said, okay, what if there's an alternative approach that is geared towards making that mode share goal, meeting what 54% of the people in the realtor survey told us they wanted to see in terms of different kinds of housing, not certainly going away from the body of housing that's here today, but providing more choices. And then maybe that means that there's some emphasis of some infill development over some larger areas of edge growth. We don't think edge growth will stop by any means, and I'm not going to reply to that at all. In fact, I'll talk about how we think that definitely will be a piece of this. And again, the little note pops up. These are scenarios. These are not the plan itself, but a way of testing these ideas. One of the things that you may have seen and is in front of you in a handout form in summary is that we went through and identified a series of indicators. When I say we, it's the broad we. It involved all of our civil and transportation disciplines to take a look at how we could compare the current conditions to the continuation of trends to these alternative approaches and what that would mean. And I'll touch on a couple of those quickly in a moment. To define terminology so that we're all on the same page, the analysis area is shown kind of the outline in green. That's the broader area that the city typically looks at for land use planning. Obviously, we have current city limits. We have kind of a bullseye that's the downtown area, if you will. Which was covered in the master plan in 2010. I said it was 3 or 4 years ago. I guess it's 5 years ago, now maybe going on six. The DMC plan, that's very recent, core neighborhoods. And then we talk about having kind of a filling in or an edge growth, and that's really where there's vacant land today, whether it's inside the city limits or outside the city limits. And then there's a component of this that would be redevelopment over time. So just a quick reminder of some of the terminology. As we looked at these couple of alternative scenarios, we held some things constant. The new job projections, the new housing projections, and the new employment projections were held the same. And I made reference earlier that the city has a very robust and park and open space system. We are holding to the standard of about 32 acres per 1,000 residents going forward, just in terms of how much overall parkland may be needed to satisfy future populations. So as we looked at these alternative scenarios, what they kind of painted a picture of was maybe a more compact and transit-supportive growth pattern. Because again, transit was something that came out quite strongly in the minds of people and what they wanted to see and what they thought was needed to help future growth in the community. So we talk about a number of points. We talk about nodes and corridors. Nodes essentially are intersections, if you will.
corridors or major roadways. We looked at the ability maybe to create a little higher concentration of jobs and residents in certain areas, to have an opportunity for more diverse development patterns, again, getting back to this walkable, mixed-use kind of thing that we heard from the community at large and we heard from the realtor survey that people had interest in. And then certainly there's going to be growth at the edge, but to the degree that some of that becomes more dense, internalized, it will take away some of the need, not all of the need by any means, for more edge growth to still be occurring as it traditionally has done in this community. We had a couple of variations of these alternatives. We had what we call a multiple nodes approach and a super nodes approach. The primary difference being, as you can see the red dots on there, with the multiple nodes, there's more of them. They're connected by multiple corridors, which are those green lines. And as we begin to think about those corridors, think about those as being the areas where there's more people, there's more jobs, there's more ability to provide higher levels of enhanced transit. We then looked at another option, which was more concentrated in a couple of super nodes, one just kind of southwest of downtown, one up at the 3741st Street area, for example, and then more of one linear connection that would be in place there along those. And again, these are just different ways of slicing an alternative growth pattern for purposes of analysis. That really gave us the ability to have a couple of different kinds of transit networks. As you can see, the multiple nodes has a little bit more of a network of the blue line, if you will. That really supports the ability for the community to consider, for example, BRT, bus rapid transit, and I'll define that here in just a second. The super nodes one, as I alluded to, had essentially the blue line that connected the two areas, which again still provides opportunity for a major transit corridor with higher frequency, just not meandering around the community perhaps quite as much. When we talk about BRT, we are essentially talking about a mode of transit that uses special bus vehicles. It's a little bit more rail-like, if you will. They have unique stations. They have branded services. They have more frequent service. It's a little higher and better transit, if you will. We also talked then about mixed-use nodes, these intersection points, whether they're bigger ones or smaller ones, being conducive to more people and jobs, greater mix of land uses, different kinds of housing, pedestrian-friendly and public spaces. And again, these are at certain locations. These are not blanketed across the community. These are not measle dots, if you will, that occur all the way across the landscape. These are along major corridors and areas where they potentially make some sense. So taking quickly a look at what those maybe might actually look like, if we talk about mixed-use nodes, intersection points, if you will, these are not Rochester examples, and probably purposely so, but a typical kind of suburban environment, if you will, that with some transit supportive mixed-use development, you may get a mixed-use building, something like this, coming in. You may get some pedestrian improvements that come in as a part of that. You may then get some infill that occurs around this. You may ultimately get some transit. There was a bus that appeared there that's a part of this as well. And then looking specifically at these two types of nodes, I'm going to talk for a minute about the multiple nodes. They tend to be smaller in size, and again, think intersections. Think a major intersection, for example, along Broadway, which is probably one of the primary avenues where some of this could occur. These multiple nodes may be about a quarter mile in radius, and they would have some targeted development and redevelopment, some infill that could occur. These super nodes, if you will, are bigger, hence the name. About a half a mile radius. These are actually places that could have a little bit more of kind of an identifiable district character to them, and I'll illuminate that for a moment here with examples. The node might be uptown, and don't think we're moving uptown to Rochester. That's not the case. But in terms of the kinds of building footprints and things that you see there, in a limited scale, those could occur around some of these major intersections, for example. If you look at the larger supernode kind of thing, think about St. Louis Park's West End, and we tried to pick a couple of examples that maybe people were familiar with. Again, that's about a half-mile radius, and it has a more intense mix, if you will, of commercial, office, and housing. And this would be under the guise that if there was interest in the supernodes, those could be at a couple of locations within the community where the mixed-use nodes, there could be more of those. We also then are talking about corridors. Again, corridors connecting the nodes, if you will. Think Broadway between a couple of major intersections, but not universally along those corridors. But as you get closer to some of these key intersection points, again, related to transit, you've got options for jobs, a greater mix of uses, more pedestrian friendly, some of the kinds of public improvements that could make those areas very attractive places to be. So what would a corridor look like, the way that might develop? again, laying in some layer of organization of the street to provide pedestrian and bicycle scale amenities, being able to build on that with some redevelopment that could occur. And again, typically tends to be three, maybe four stories, wouldn't be more than that. An example of where this exists today, and I suspect those of you that were involved and followed, and that's probably many of you, all of the work that was going on during the DMC work, there were frequent references to what's happening in the city of Cleveland along the Euclid Corridor. And not universally along that, but that might be an example, at least of portions of which you would see two, three-story kinds of development come in and be a little more intense. And again, I want to caution you, or lay out the caution, that we're not talking, for example, about Broadway from city limit to city limit. So we use Broadway as an example. There may be areas of that where it makes some sense. So also looked at is growth in and around some of the core neighborhoods around town. You've seen some of that occurring. That trend is likely to occur. It certainly needs to reflect the architectural integrity of the existing neighborhoods that are there, but we suspect there will be increasing pressure as time goes on for some level of additional development in and around those. As we look at Rochester today and we talk about primary activity centers, downtown is really where it happens. There's a lot of mixed-use activity that goes on here. People want to live close to that, and you're certainly seeing some of that that's taken place in the past. So let me talk for a minute about a comparison of indicators, and I'll give you the relief message on winding down as we move through this. But what we had done is gone through and did a fairly fair amount of detailed work of looking at both what it means in terms of current condition, if continuation of trends the way Rochester Central has developed in the past continued for the next 30 years, and then what these alternatives might mean. And for example, one of the things that the traffic people always like to look at is VMT, vehicle miles traveled. If you look at the alternatives that I just talked about of taking kind of an approach that says we're going to do some nodes that are a little bit more intense, we're going to have some corridors that connect those, we're going to have some transit facilities that can run along those lines, what does that mean? And essentially it means if you do that, you can have about a 15% less growth in vehicle miles traveled comparing the continuation of trends to the alternatives. Similarly, in vehicle hours traveled, 16 to 19% less growth in that capacity between what would happen at 155,000 versus 145 or 143,000 with the alternative approach. It's simply a way of managing a portion of that. Roadway congestion is something that is a factor. It's not the way the current conditions are under the dispersed growth. There's 100 miles, for example, of heavily congested, there will be, I should say, in the continuation of trends, 100 miles of heavily congested roadway. That can be reduced in this alternative because it's more transit-friendly, 75 to 86. If you look at severely congested, there are none of those today. There will be 24 of those lane miles in 2040 with the continuation of trends. If there's a moderation of that through an alternative approach, that can be dropped to 12 to 15. So there are changes that can take place there. Access to transit is another of the indicators, simply how close people are in jobs or living to frequent transit, which is generally defined as 15 minutes or less between the peak hour, being able to catch a bus, for example. I won't go through all the numbers. You can see those. Again, there are reductions that take place. I shouldn't say reductions. There are more people that can be served, and there are more jobs that can be served by a more concentrated format of nodes and corridors, rather than simply the dispersed pattern of those happening elsewhere. We talked early on, and I mentioned again the mode share goals that the city adopted in the past. Today, currently it's about 10%. The goal is to increase those commute trips by 23% more. What happens if the continuation of trends takes place, that number goes up some. It goes from 10 to 14%, but it falls far short of the adopted goal of 23. If you look at mixing some kind of this alternative approach in the future, it's possible to attain that 23% goal, and that can actually be done. Excuse me. Looking at operational costs, similarly, continuation of trends, and I'll just target one of these numbers, we'll run about $51 per capita in an annualized cost of operating the transit system, and this is operational only. In the multiple nodes, that goes to 141. To the super nodes, it goes to 107. And you might think, my gosh, that's two and a half, two times. What that doesn't factor in, though, is with the existing growth pattern that's taken place in the past, if we project that forward and we still say we want to meet that mode share goal that the city has adopted, the investment that it will actually take to get there is $177 per capita, so it's actually again higher than what the alternatives could be because it's necessary to meet that goal.
I think we have a quick question.
Sure.
So the dollars, I assume they're constant, what, $2015 dollars?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, correct. They were fixed at this point in time.
Thank you.
Good point. And looking at total transportation costs, I won't go through all these numbers, but it's a similar situation. And again, if we look at what it takes to invest to get there with the dispersed growth pattern, it actually exceeds the alternative numbers in terms of transit as well. So as we've looked at the trend scenario versus the alternatives, one of the things that the planners like to talk about is kind of what's called the missing middle. If you look on the left side today, Rochester has a lot of single-family housing, and it will continue to have that in the future. That will be the strong mainstay of housing by 2040. It also has, on the right side, downtown has the ability to have some kind of scattered sites and some additional housing. What largely gets kind of lost is the variance of duplexes and townhouses and those kinds of things, which is typically labeled the missing middle. In looking at a more transit-supportive, alternative kind of approach, it does allow, because of these nodes and corridors that I spoke of, more of that kind of development to take place. And again, we haven't abstractly said, for some reason, we need more of that. The community has told us they're interested in seeing more than that. And tied to that, the populations, as we age and as the young people come in, are looking for that kind of development as well. So we're trying to provide more options and more opportunities, if you will, for housing choice. So it should be no surprise when we compare the continuation of trends to the alternatives, the new thing that comes in is that we're providing opportunities for jobs and housing in these nodes and corridors. In these intersection areas where you would see more development take place, that becomes a new kind of housing for Rochester, if you will, or at least a concentration of housing of a different variety and a different type, again, consistent with what we've heard people are interested in. In terms of access, which is principally to downtown in terms of activity centers, again, the alternative, because of the ability to have enhanced transit, allows more people to access that area either by bicycle, by transit, or walkable, because, again, there's more density, there's more growth. Looking at future growth patterns from a land consumption perspective, if you look at the dispersed growth and trends, the city's going to need about 5,900 acres of additional land, what we've called kind of greenfield development, fill-in development, the city limits, edge development, to meet that need. If you look at a potential growth pattern in the next 30 years that says we're going to have some areas, and again, I would emphasize some, of more concentrated areas where people can live in a townhouse or a condo or something like that, we can reduce the amount of land that's needed and the amount of public services that are necessary to support that down in the alternatives to about 4,600 acres. So that's a significant change. So over the course of the early weeks of December, just prior to the holidays, we had a chance, we being members of the consultant team and staff, to go out and meet with various segments of the community and present some of this information. And what's on the screen right now is kind of the mix of some of the meetings that took place. And some of you may have attended some of those. We took in some additional comments that have been added to this volume of literally probably about 6,000 comments and opinions that we've gotten throughout the comprehensive planning process and or were made available to us as a part of that overall process. And so we had a chance to hear what people had to say. For any of you that attended, we used some clicker technology, which was, I think, a lot of fun for people. People certainly seemed to enjoy it. What we learned from that, of those that were there, is about 50% of the people had not participated in prior meetings, which was interesting. We had pulled in some new audience. Most of those people tended to live and work in Rochester. Most of those have been here for more than 10 years. And there were a couple of segments of the population, the 30 to 49-year-olds, about 34% of the people came from that. And the 50 to 69-year-olds, about 48% of the people came from that. So we had some concentrations, if you will, of age groups. We asked a series of questions, and they were purposely kind of value questions. Do you support this or not support this? And I think this was kind of consistent with some of the earlier information that was asked as well. And for example, I'll run through these kind of quickly. We asked about encouraging a more compact development pattern that maximizes the use of existing infrastructure. Did that make sense? And the community told us, as you can see the bars on the left side being strongly supportive or supportive, that about 80% of the people said, you know, yeah, that makes some sense to us, that we really should maximize existing infrastructure. We know we're going to have to expand infrastructure, but there should be some emphasis on taking into account investments we've already made to date to make sure we're taking those and utilizing those fully. Also talked about to encouraging growth on the edges of the community, and we had, you know, kind of a mixed bag across the spectrum here. Some people supported that, some people were neutral, some people did not support that. We know inherently, in order to accommodate Rochester's growth, there's going to continue to be some of that growth on those edges. That's not going to go away as a part of this. Looking at encouraging redevelopment of older declining commercial areas. And again, this gets back to maybe some of these major intersections that have vacant structures, they have vacant lots, they may have some tired properties. That should we look at improving those and making sure that we, again, reflect the investments the city has made in the past, there was really strong support for that across the board with the groups that we met with. And we met with people from our neighbors to the Rochester area builders and a lot of people in between. In looking at encouraging development, again, that has this wider range of housing options, and I would go back to, again, we heard from the realtor survey strongly that people like that. Again, we heard from the people that attended these meetings, that makes sense. We'd like to see more of that. Again, not that we're taking community and saying it's all that by any means, but that becomes a fabric of what we want to provide in terms of housing choices. Looking at multiple nodes, and if you recall, that was the map that had a variety of red diesels on it, if you will, connected by some green lines, those transit corridors. We asked people what they thought of that. People kind of liked that. They liked kind of the smaller nuances. I think they felt maybe that was more Rochester-like. When we asked the same question about the supernodes, we had a little bit more of a mixed response. People were either neutral or didn't support that as much as they did. Let's think more in terms of smaller scale of what we might do in certain areas to meet a variety of housing demands without creating really large-scale things taking place. And so I think that message came through fairly strongly. In terms of directing more housing into core neighborhoods and around downtown, as has been happening, people thought, yeah, that probably will continue to occur, and there was support for that kind of thing occurring. We also asked specifically, and I think what's important here perhaps, we ask about a couple of modes of transit, if you will. Would you like to see enhanced transit service that really serves downtown employment and alleviates congestion and parking? People said yes. They also said, though, that they pretty much supported very more focused transportation that said, let's get people to some of the key destinations, downtown, St. Mary's, some of those kind of things. Strong support bar there as well. So the message we got out of that is that I think people think that transit is part of the mix of Rochester's future movement. It needs to be considered. We ask about a public transit system focusing on key destinations and getting around the community more community-wide. And again, people said, yeah, that makes sense to us. Let's not only try to get from point A to point B, maybe in the north-south configuration, we'd like to get to some of the cross-city destinations as well, too. Obviously, that comes into play in terms of where the market is and the density is that we can actually make that happen. We also asked people about walking and bicycling, and there was strong support that we need to take into account all of the modes of transportation as Rochester grows in the future and need to take that into consideration when plans are being made. And then we also asked people about, well, you know, the level of focus on automobile travel with no additional emphasis on any other options. Should we just drive everywhere? And what we heard on the right side is, no, we shouldn't drive everywhere. We should have other options, but we still need to drive if and when we want to. And I think that came through strongly as well. So what's come out of this for us in trying to throw all of this in the hopper and say, okay, what are the key messages here? Is we're saying that there's some kind of guiding principles that are emerging here. And that as we begin now to roll up our sleeves and look at a future land use pattern for Rochester, it does need to be one that integrates land use and transportation systems. And I think that's the path the city has been very effectively on for a number of years. It needs to take into account that it supports the downtown master plan, the mode share goal, the DMC planning, all of these other planning efforts that have been taken into account because there's been a lot of work done. It needs to optimize existing infrastructure. We heard that strongly. People know there's going to need to be increases in pipes and wires, if you will, and roadways, if you will. The emphasis is let's use the infrastructure we have as efficiently as we can. And then balancing redevelopment and reinvestment with new growth. It was really kind of all about the replacement of some of these tired areas, if you will, with some redevelopment, some new energy, but not at the expense of everything else. There will continue to be new growth on the edges. We heard in terms of principles that the things that are transit supportive are important, but placemaking is really important. It harkens back to that message we had from people about quality of life. That there really is an interest in Rochester maintaining a really strong quality of life. And it was felt in order to do that, we need to think about where people live, where people recreate, how they get around, where they work, all of those things that lead to aspects of placemaking supported by a transit network and system. We also heard that there is support for growth with the existing infrastructure investments. I kind of touched on that before. A policy direction that supports a balanced approach to redevelopment and reinvestment and new growth. All of these things will come into play in the future. And then continuing those coordination efforts with some of those plans that I mentioned before is part of the messaging that we've heard. So where are we going from here? We've had some of these kind of guiding principles, key messages that we wanted to share with you today. To be able to put on the table and say, this is kind of some of the things we're hearing. These are some of the things that are going to help shape what we're going to do next. What we're doing next is we're going to be working very collaboratively with city staff on beginning to draft the various elements of the comprehensive plan. Transportation, land use, housing, parks and recreation, economic development, community facilities, right on down the line. We're going to come back to you with updates at Cal meetings as that material starts coming together, because again, there will be big ideas and policy implications that we want to be able to put in front of you and at least get a head nod or a head going the other way, that you're not going the right direction, because we don't want to go out too far. I think what you will see is that there will be more frequency of our Cal gatherings, if you will have us back in the future, than what there has been to date. We're looking at this kind of chapter-by-chapter preparation and review taking place in the winter and spring of where we are in 16. We will have a draft done by about the end of the first quarter. We see that probably 3 months after that will be necessary for some of the reviews, some of the modifications, some of the council review, planning commission review, boards and commissions, public, a lot of things that we'll kind of put together in terms of that game plan as that comes together. So we're still on course. We have, as I indicated at the beginning of my remarks, a lot has happened, a lot we have looked at, a lot we have learned. It's now time to start taking some of those messages and applying those and putting together some material that we can bring back to you that you can really kind of look at and begin to understand what all of this means. So we wanted to share that direction with you, and so having done that, thank you for being patient. I know there was a lot of material to go through, and Mitzi and I and others are certainly available for questions, comments, discussion. Thank you for being patient.
Thank you. Thank you for the update. One question I have that... off the bat, just to kind of make sure we're setting expectations, could you talk for a moment about what the comp plan is not? In other words, we've spent a lot of time and effort on this initiative, and we're at the threshold of seeing a comp plan. And I don't know that we would want to tell people that the work is done come summer. There's certainly some follow-on work, and the name might imply that it's comprehensive, but it's only a piece of the puzzle, I think. So could you
speak to that?
Certainly.
It's a very good question. I guess the easiest, most matter-of-fact response to that is it's not zoning and it's not regulatory. The plan is focused on really planting the ideas about how the city has collectively said it wants to grow. How will it change? What will it look like in the year 2040? A component of that, of the conference of plans, that's very significant is it's not simply a matter of putting what we might consider great ideas on the wall and standing back and going, well, now how the heck are we going to do that? Because there's an implementation piece of this as well that will look at the strategic kind of initiatives that are necessary to get from where the city is today to where it wants to be in 2040. And what that will do is pave the way, for example, that I'm guessing there will be some modifications that will need to take place of the city zoning ordinance. This would be normal in any city. Because if we're talking about some of the smaller little mixed-use nodes, are those accommodated in the ordinance structure today, or there are a few tweaks that need to take place to make that happen? So the easiest answer is that this is a guide plan, an expression of vision and policy for where the city wants to be. The way you actually get there, though, involves some of the other components, such as ordinances and regulatory measures that will happen subsequent to the comprehensive plan.
Unless those regulations incorporate the comprehensive plan and require compliance as part of the criteria for approval, which currently some of them do.
Okay.
In that case, it does become an important consideration, because for GDPs, I believe, Mitzi, and land subdivisions, there's a requirement for compliance with the comp plan. So although it's not a regulation unto itself, if you incorporate it as in another regulation, essentially you bootstrapped it into that regulation.
Okay. And it's because the zoning and subdivisions are the tools for implementing the plan.
I just didn't want the impression left with the council that this is not a regulation. It acts as a regulation when it's incorporated by a regulation.
Right. If I could pick up quickly. And I can tell you that the outline and then ultimately the content of the Rochester plan is not the standard outline, if you will, because Rochester has a number of nuances that you were just referring to. And so there are pieces of what the city has today that we've brought into the new comprehensive plan and added to what will be the mix of new material as well. So I think there are some very uniquely Rochester things that will be a part of this.
Other questions? Mr. Hickey.
So I've made this point before in several meetings, but just as we're getting ready to dig into the nuts and bolts of the actual comp plan. You know, a comp plan that I can support will be a truly comprehensive plan. So it shouldn't just, mesh together with the downtown master plan. Downtown master plan is 5 years old. I think as part of the comprehensive plan, we need to review it. If everything stands up to the test of time and it's all still pertinent, then it should be incorporated in the comprehensive plan as an appendix or however we do it. And once this comprehensive plan is published, it should supersede the 2nd Street Corridor Study, the Downtown Master Plan. If they all are still applicable, they should be incorporated as part of the comprehensive plan. The one exception I would see is the DMC plan, which is, I think when we adopted it, we already have some language that talks about how it relates to our comprehensive plan. So I think it's important. I know it's a lot of work, but we spent a lot of time adjudicating conflicting plans. And again, if these prior plans are still applicable, then let's review them, incorporate them, and make it part of the comprehensive plan.
And if not, in your hierarchy, the comp plan comes first, if I heard you correctly.
Correct.
Other questions, comments?
I think one of the resounding things I see on the map is the volume of area we're talking about for edge growth. It's another thing that I'd like to see come back as part of this, is something that doesn't just leave the edge growth to random chance, that maybe we have an ability to suggest some focus on the edge. And I'm wondering, is that already, maybe I'm preaching to the choir, is that already coming, or are we just looking at kind of this vast area of edge?
No, it is coming, and I'm not being facetious. It literally starts tomorrow.
Okay.
Now it's taken the broader kind of guiding principles to say, what does this really mean on the land? And so, indeed, we're looking at where that growth occurs, where it most makes sense from an infrastructure perspective. So that level of detail will be coming back.
Great.
Mr. Ruskin.
Thanks for the report. Nice update, and I think it keeps us focused on where we're going with this, and the sharing of the information is helpful. One of the things you mentioned was this missing middle when it comes to the housing, diversity, and affordability. And I'm trying to think, was it 20,000? You had a big number up there, the things that we need. But have you considered it all in the last year, a little over a year? We've put 2,000 to 3,000 that kind of seem like they fit in this area. Is that addressing what the area that's missing, or is that still missing?
Councilman, we haven't done the calculations we will as to how much of that market now has been more recently absorbed. Rochester, like many cities, has seen a lot more multifamily housing, and I suspect as a percentage of your housing starts, it's probably a pretty big number. And so we'll look and see where have those taken place, how do they fit within the fabric, particularly of how do we achieve some kind of transit enhancement in the community, and how do those things fit together.
Okay,
great.
Thank you.
I just wanted to echo what Nick said, that there's, in terms of, regardless of where the growth is happening, whether it's edge or infill, we've never had a focus on whether or not the type of development is even going to sustain its own infrastructure costs. And I hope that, that's part of looking at this when we come forward, because we shouldn't be building any parts of the city that are not sustainable. And, regardless of the type of development, I just want to make sure that we're calculating in those needs.
I think, as you're aware, we do have a fiscal analysis component of this, and we can answer some of those things.
Maybe if I can follow on Councilmember Ruska's comment here. We have had a lot of apartments or multifamily units coming online, and I'm wondering, when you talk about the missing middle, how much is it mostly locality, or is it mostly scale of the development?
I think it's a couple of things. There's a locational aspect to it without question, because again, that locational aspect ties back into getting more concentration of jobs and people at certain points that can be supported by a transit network that has the ridership that's needed to do that. And so there is a locational aspect of that. I think there's a unit type and mix probably component of that too. And, you know, we're not prepared today to say that we need 28% more townhomes than we have today because that's where the market demand is. But we have very strong indicators from all of the data and all of the public comments that that's a component of what, if I can stereotype, my generation and your generation are looking at. You know, those that are more in their 30s and those that are in their 60s are really looking for the same thing these days. They're looking for mixed-use, walkable environments far more than that market was looking at 10, 20 years ago. So part of it is unit picks, mixed priorities, locational. We know that there has been a lot of multifamily housing, and it's not simply the volume that is in the right places, too, to make all the pieces fit together. That's part of it.
And I think Mark just hit on the key piece to that conversation for us is there's certainly been interest in multifamily and in townhome development, but thinking more intentionally about how it's arranged to help support the transit system and help support creating places for people to choose if they wish to choose to live before there's more frequent transit is something that we haven't really strategized from in the past.
All right. Anyone else on this topic? Ms. Means?
I just had a question regarding this housing diversity and affordability. What I hear from the Rochester area builders is that the cost of land is so expensive. And so how will that, I mean, how will you be able to include that without addressing the affordability piece, or are you addressing the affordability piece?
The housing piece will look, the city has some pretty strong affordability measures and policies in place right now. We will be looking at affordability as a part of the housing recommendations that come back in the plan.
Okay. When the plan is ready, maybe by the second quarter of 2016?
Yes, by essentially the draft we pull together by roughly the end of March and then have about a three-month review period.
And that's going to incorporate some of the downtown master plans, transit plans, and those other plans in it by that time frame?
We're beginning to look now, and I think there's issues about whether or not things are really... What does incorporate mean? Does it mean it's adopted into the plan by reference? Does it mean it's a separate study that can exist and be updated independently? We're looking at all of those pieces to decide. I think it's fair to say that the things that the city has adopted as policy, like MoChair goal, for example, and trying to move the meter a little bit more transit, are going to be things that you'll see coming back as a part of this plan. So we need to really look at the consistency of all of the plans that we're just talking about, downtown, Second Street, all the rest of those, and see how this fits together as a total package.
And then just to address your concerns on affordability too, Gary, you can also pass it on. This is just an informational fact sheet from Federal Highway that they issued. It really talks more about that combined cost of housing and transportation. It's looking at total cost of living and not just focusing only on housing costs. And part of what we're really trying to see how we can advance here in Rochester is how we incorporate the transportation solutions as part of the total cost of living. Okay.
All right. Any final questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for the update. We look forward to additional progress reports as we move toward that milestone.
As you said, we will be back.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to our next topic this afternoon, we have a proposal that Councilmember Campion would like to talk about to make the startup process for small businesses more efficient in many respects. So I'll let you take it from here.
Perfect. Well, first, I guess I'll apologize to my fellow council members. The last COW meeting before our final one, some travel plans got hampered by some rain, so I got a little bit late start. I intended to bring this, I think, on the 14th. But what better way to start off the new year than to talk about small business and startups? So while we're in Nashville, I just got fortunate to sit in on a discussion given by a few cities about the Startup in a Day program from the U.S. Small Business Administration. And essentially what it is taking a pledge. There used to be kind of a financial reward and incentive with it, but now it's much more about the mentality of taking the pledge to focus your effort for your city on making sure that when you go to start a business, you can do it in a day. You can figure out things like the zoning rules, the licenses, the permits, public safety, fair competition laws. You can have a hub for information about that to get some entrepreneurs that may be on the tipping point started in the right direction, especially to get through the city kind of phase of starting anything like that kind of as expediently as possible. So it really boiled down to hearing these stories about how other cities have really removed red tape for people that are trying to start new businesses. So the pledge asks us to, you know, within 12 months, to kind of start up with an online tool that helps people get started. And the kicker here, and the thing that's been important to me and came up during the budget talk, is that you make your electronic applications, your review processes, your building and safety, your zoning permits, everything accessible online. I think it's, I think I put in my note, I don't remember if it made it through in the final cut, but that as a city of the first class, I don't think it's sufficient anymore to be internet eventually. Like, I think we have to start being internet first, and we're going to have to start taking things that have to be submitted to paper as a problem, not as a okay, that's a temporary stopgap. Mm-hmm. So really what I've been trying to push here, and I think what they lay out here, is adopting a goal. And maybe the goal is 14 months, so we don't officially adopt this for two more months to give people some lead time. But ultimately, within 12 months of it, taking the pledge, the goal is to have an online tool and to have online processes to support the tool. And there's a few other kind of pieces in here hopefully you were all able to review ahead of time. But I wanted to bring this up again. I felt like during the budget debate, we had a little bit of discussion about taking the next step on Acela, figuring out how to focus resource to make that tool as efficient, as productive as possible. I feel like we have to set a date. It's time to pick a date and march toward it and then start correcting things as we go. This is a priority. It's a priority for me. Working in the industry, you can just see that everything is going that direction. It's a priority for other cities. They're facilitating this within their business communities. And I think it is a priority for us, for some departments, and I know they're working on it. But my goal is to start having that discussion, pick a date, and then, you know, work to get the resources allocated the correct way to make sure this happens. I kind of wanted to throw that note out there. You saw, I know that planning and building safety came back and said they had a couple concerns about how to implement this. I know resources are tight. It turns out, having watched the cycle at least twice now, resources will probably always be tight. So I think we're going to have to pick a deadline and march toward it. I'd like to suggest that we do the first of 2017. I think it's a nice round number, but I'll kind of maybe open up a conversation with you all about it.
Does anyone want to make the pledge?
I would like to make the pledge today, but I know that there's probably more information to gather, and I'm not always as foolhardy as some people might assume, so I can defer as well if people are feeling like there's more to figure out. I just feel as if technology, if efficiency are a goal of ours, we need to pick a date. We need to go for it. It's not something that's going to happen. I don't feel like naturally we have to kind of take the bull by the horns here.
You know, just to go a little level deeper, I'm not opposed to setting a goal. I wonder, too, if there could be some interim milestones set. And as I was reading through your materials, it occurred to me that some of the audience that we're trying to address, small business startups and so forth, that's probably the group that they don't know what they don't know. And I wonder if we could, you know, we hear staff saying, you know, it's time and resources, and I understand that, and we can address that. But in the interim, I wonder if there's an opportunity to at least provide information, a website, something, a class, anything that I could go to. You know, I'm considering starting a business in Rochester, Minnesota. What are the kinds of things I need to consider? It's a food establishment. And talk about the permits and so forth. Even if we didn't have all of the actual systems and processes refined to our liking. And that was my point, is I'd like to see if we could identify some interim milestones rather than maybe set a date of, you know, January 2017, and then, you know, we get there and we make it or we don't. Maybe there's some positives we could make along the way. Just a suggestion as I read through your presentation. Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, so of this, I mean, you'd mentioned kind of the online permitting and that. How much of this process would you, is Acela-centric? I mean, is that a big, like, is that...
The description I've had and the research I've done is suggesting that Acela can do just about everything we would need. And, you know, have had conversations that took place in Nashville. It sounded like we wouldn't be reinventing the wheel necessarily, that there are communities. And one of the kind of accusations that comes with sometimes is, like, by trying to be efficient, we're trying to lower the bar. The fact is there are other communities out there that have, and I'm sure this will come as a shock to many, higher standards than we do in some ways, that are doing this all digitally. So it's not about the level of expectation for the community that's involved. But yeah, to answer your question, I think Acela can do this. And if we got down this path and we were 100% leveraging Acela and it didn't do it, then, you know, I'd be more open to modifying our goal. But I think at this point, I haven't heard anything that suggests, you know, things like online scheduling of meetings with the government officials, whatever it is, if it's inspectors or if it's planning, if it's submission of certain pieces of documents, online billing, and I know we're working on it, so I'm gonna knock that one out anyway. Things like that, I think we need to have a comprehensive answer for what we're doing in the area, and it's just not enough anymore for disparate pieces. This has to be a focus for our city.
Thank you.
Okay.
So one of the things, and I'm supportive of this, but we need to clearly articulate what the expectations are, what exactly is going to be included and what is not going to be, and I think that might be, you know, maybe have staff or including yourself come back with something like that, because it's not good enough to say we're going to put what we need online. We need to detail it, exactly what is going to be online. It gets complicated too, because lots of types of businesses are going to require, you know, county permitting as well, and they can either choose to be part of it, or else we can at least provide link to the necessary county documents. When you say, you know, internet availability, really, that it's also important to stress that's equally available on mobile apps, which a lot of our technology stuff does not necessarily perform as well on the mobile apps. And, you know, ultimately, what I to go forward, and I'm fully supportive of going forward, I just want to see that list of what it is we're going to knock out by January 1st, 2017, and then, you know, just simply direct staff to execute them.
I think that's entirely reasonable for expectation of the council before moving forward. So I guess maybe then I would just ask for a consensus of the council to spend some staff time as I go to look through this. I had the opportunity to meet with Ready today, and they seem like they were on board. I'd like to make sure we get the builders in this, and then maybe make sure that we're setting the expectations in a way that's going to meet a lot of people's expectations. So I'll maybe come back. I'm going to set a month goal for me. I know that's way longer than it should take, but if I can pull all those people together and come back with this is the menu of what we're going to be getting 2017, then we can move on that. Would that feel like something people would feel comfortable with?
Well, I think that's part and parcel of setting a goal. Something's got to be measurable so we know we're making appropriate progress. Mr. Ruska?
I guess one of the things that I didn't see on here was, and I'm good at this too, but it seems like we've already got a little bit of a test pattern here with other cities that have done this, and I guess I'm wondering if they have documented results on how, you know, have they seen this activated and used and results that come from it versus just put it out there to see what happens, because it's kind of like one of these things, if you put it out there and it makes a lot of sense and it seems to be a good way to go, if people aren't using it and it isn't really being successful, how do you know? So I guess I'd like to see some type of matrix to measure that and maybe see what other cities can come back and show us that they've, you know, they committed to it, what were the findings and what were the results of that. That would be really helpful too.
Sure.
And I agree, no need to reinvent the wheel. Look at some of the best practices that are out there. We could pose the question to League of Minnesota Cities or even the National to say, what are some other communities that have had positive results with implementing this kind of a process? Let's learn from that.
And I don't know if people had the opportunity. The SBA site has a list. I think it's about 100 cities that have adopted it. And I just got lucky that Brookings, South Dakota, happens to be one of the cities that I know the mayor and a council member from. So we were talking about what they've kind of experienced. And they've actually built a toolkit that I think we might be able to leverage for our kind of customer-facing thing, but I'll definitely try and compile this and bring it back. So,
is there going to be the staff?
Yeah, I guess, do I need an official consensus?
Well, you're asking for time to put this together, correct?
Yeah.
But you can do that by consensus.
With staff, yeah.
Yeah. I think that
perfect.
Is there anyone that disagrees? I don't see any downside to this.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate it.
Ms. Meeks.
It's something that we've talked about so long on the council about streamlining our process and make it easier to get through, you know, the permitting and the other things that are needed before they even come to the council. And you'd think, and you mentioned a cell, it seems like a cell, I don't know how prepared a cell of people are to pull this in, and maybe we need to talk to Randy and other department heads to get their opinions as well as you're meeting with staff. You know, I think it's a great idea. I was actually excited about it, feeling kind of negligent that as a member and attendee of NLC that we haven't been good about submitting some of the information that we've learned and trying to implement it. So I thank you so much for doing this.
I was just going to throw out, if we need a funding mechanism, I think the other side of this too is come January 1st, 2017, this electronic makes our staff more efficient, and I think that perhaps there's a paper processing fee that comes down the road in the future too to steer people going down this more efficient path.
Mr. Campion.
I will say on that exact front, the groups I met with have been very amenable about, you know, if you can... whatever that fee is, if it saves us, if it's less than what it costs us to send a member down for 2 hours to sit and wait, find their way through, then they'd be happy to pay it. So I think we can balance it and balance what our expectations are. I don't want to lead with the fee structure, but maybe we can figure out what the value is and then figure out what it's worth.
And I was actually going the other way. If you want to file with a paper fee, you're
going to
get charged
even better.
That.
Incentive.
Your carrot.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else on that topic? I think there's consensus that we devote some time to coming back with some ideas.
Yeah. I was kind of struck by the connection with the Native American community, and here we are in this area where Fond du Lac is, you know, a couple blocks away. How do we involve the, how do we connect with the Native American community? Which you hardly ever see in any documentation, so I just wanted to bring that up. And also, I believe the president of the Rochester Education Association might be a person to whom you'd like to connect with. His name is Tucker Cutone. I think it's Q-U-E-T-O-N-E. And I'd be glad to work with you on that
Perfect.
Base if you'd like me to.
That'd be great. And I'll probably, it seems like we have a nice group of people that touch all the different spots, so I'll probably be reaching out to as I need some assistance to contact the right people and get you guys on board and maybe help fill out some of the gaps. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right. Anything else on that topic? All right. Any other topics for this afternoon? We'll have a busy evening tonight on this project.
Yeah, I sent you a few topic ideas for the Committee of the Whole meeting as well today. But, you know, I can work. Let me know if there's any concerns with any of those.
Well, I did get those, probably a dozen suggestions.
Yeah.
I was going to kind of repackage that and send it out to the
fine.
Council.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you know, we didn't get to everything we wanted to do in 2015.
We had a lot of no dating meeting dates.
Yeah, we're gonna have to prioritize some of those things.
And that's just it. As long as we're actually having meetings, that's great, but we had a whole lot of canceled dates. So, you know, that's so if we can get through more by actually meeting on the Mondays, I'm, you know, certainly cool with that. But what I actually, my question, I sent this off to staff and I never got an answer back. So I just wanted to, I understand we're doing some closed door small group meetings on the Holiday Inn project this coming week. And I was just curious what the topic is going to be. And it's just, I want to make sure, is, are all the DMC folks involved with that then too?
Well, the topics are, we're trying to, we think there needed to be a lot more information, so we're trying to go through and come up with a more thorough listing of questions and answers so that basically people understand the project better and then we can decide where to go from there.
Okay.
After we come back to some form of a public
And meeting. Are the DMC folks involved with that?
No, not at this one.
Okay.
We will be meeting, and we have been meeting with the DMC meeting folks.
I wish we had more of those types of discussions. I think they're beneficial. You know, I had a couple things that I wanted to make sure were on there, and I just want to say one is the Women Minority Business Enterprise. And, yep. You know, frankly, not only do I want to know where DMC EDA are on this contracting, but what are we doing as well as a city? Are we adhering to some of the things we've asked of DMC to do? So I really would like that in the first and second quarter, ideally the first quarter. And I'd also like to really talk about this affordable housing. I know, Mitzi, you and I had mentioned last year we were going to talk about some incentives and housing developments and have integrated a housing stock. And of course, you're busy with this comp plan, but and we haven't even talked necessarily about what specifically we want to share, but I still think it's important that we don't have affordable housing in silo areas, especially not in Northwest. We have lots of them. We need to spread it out evenly throughout the community as best we can.
That was one of the ones that I put in mind as well. And we were originally supposed to get a affordable housing report from the foundation November of 2014, 14 months ago. And that's right at the top of my list for things I want to hear about.
The other thing, and I think I shared it with you, Mr. Shingold, or Gary, or Mr. Staver, but I think our recruiting update is really important as we try to have different thoughts from people from different parts of the state and you know, different part of the country even. What are we doing in terms of recruiting? And when you talk about the Native American community, you know, we have, I love to go to the casino. I can only go once a month, but with my $100, but anyway. I like the casino, but I mean, there are a lot of business folks that may be interested in applying for some of the opportunities here in the city. And I would like to see what we're doing to reach out, because we should be reaching out.
And there, on that topic, I don't know that we have to do it all by ourselves. I know that Mr. Newman and myself, we've been part of a supplier diversity group where we're trying to figure out ways to attract a variety of women and minority-owned businesses to participate in business activities in Rochester and coming up with different strategies. So my point being that I don't know that we have to do this in a vacuum. We can perhaps tap our friends at the Chamber or some of the other entities to see, you know, what they're learning.
I think we need to know a little bit about what's happening so we don't have to duplicate every doggone thing.
Right.
And we can't do it if we don't share. And so as you learn about supplier diversity initiatives, I think we should have a report. We should be more willing to share some of the resources, some of the new ideas, some of the vision, and see what we can do to enhance the strength of our old council and community.
Just one quick aside that I recall from those discussions on supplier diversity. As we surveyed the population, it was kind of interesting that people did not always self-identify appropriately. When we asked people, are you a business run by women? And they take a certain element of pride in the fact, no, I'm a business person, and I've made this business work, and why should it matter, and I'm not going to identify myself. And so we found that kind of interesting, that the survey data was somewhat skewed because people wouldn't identify properly. You know, just an aside.
No, I know that as a fact. You know, if it's not discernible, and you don't have to divulge it if you have that as a choice. But all we can do is try.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
That acting affirmatively again. You know, we can try. That's all I have. I just wanted to make sure that those, especially the women minority business enterprise.
Right.
I'd really like to see that. Okay. Just a reporter.
Well, Mr. Wojcik sent me a list of his that he'd like to see, and I just started the framework of the calendar
for
the year.
Did you get mine? I'll resend it. I'll send you something.
Do. And if anyone else has some, please send them forward, and we'll try to filter them in as best we can.
I should mention that if you want to do all the department reviews, they have to be put in there also. So
those
you will
mostly in there.
You will need to do some prioritizing of all those items.
Yep,
I don't know that we canceled that many meetings in 2015. I thought, for the most part, you met almost all the time except the last 2 weeks of December.
More than we have in the past, anyway. Mm-hmm. I think. But anyway, so if you have any specific ideas, please send them to me and we'll just kind of filter them in. Okay. Anything else this afternoon?
You have one thing. I've been a wreck all day, more so than usual, because we were scheduled to close on the acquisition of the Chateau Theater property and the Labor Temple building, and I just received an email from Rochester Title that the deeds and everything have been... So the city is now the owner of the Chateau Theater building and the Labor Temple building.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, there have been some issues about the maintenance or the trash or something in the alley or something's peeling. Anyway, I know you're going to look at it. Thank you. Nice job.
Turn it back.
Warning.
Want it or want it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.